Hi, thank you so much. Thank you, Stanley, for the wonderful intro. I met Stanley while I was volunteering at Venice High School for one of his STEM courses, and I got to work a little bit with the kids over there, and their interest in drones and technology as well was really fascinating, and I just love continuing to spread the word and listening and learning from other people as well of what their insights are about technology. So like Stanley said, I have a very recent drone career, and drones weren't a career about 4 years ago. So I could go a little bit more in depth on that whole issue. I had a smart uncle call me up one day, and he told me to buy a drone to film his house. And at the time, I thought drones were those little devices they flew in the mall over your head, distracting people, like toys, little plastic toys. And I just refused the idea to my uncle. And he persisted and until he bought me the drone. And I flew it the first time and I fell in love. I had no idea what to expect, but I probably got it at the perfect time, which is this huge company, monopoly of drones now called DJI, released their Phantom 1, their first really consumer, prosumer drone. And I flew this thing, and I did the real estate job, and I loved it, and I wanted to expand. So I went to the local drone shop, and it was just starting up, and found them on the internet, and we became best of friends, and we continued to expand the shop, Control Me Robotics, as Stanley mentioned. From there, we started filming music videos and movies and getting to work with big tech companies and building drones and robotics that just never existed yesterday, which was pretty exciting for us. We got to build really cool drones for filming movies, really big drones to do funny experiential stuff, like we'd have hula hoops with lasers and lights. One time we made a drone that'll shake liquor for like Absolut Vodka. Drones that drop Polaroids on big crowds so they have these like analog drone selfies of themselves. And I got to work on awesome movies and be parts of awesome big projects. The latest biggest project I think I worked on was the OJ Made in America, which was this ESPN documentary. It was about 8 hours long. Not many people have seen it, but it did win the Oscar for the best documentary this year. And I got to be the lead pilot for this, and I got to work very closely with the director and understand the story, which I wasn't too privy to the OJ story, but I became very intimate with it. And it was very fun to be involved in that kind of movie and that kind of production, and writing history in a way for media and movies and things like that. I started working with Intel, and I would go around and give talks with the CEO, Brian Krzanich, like on International Drone Day, or we'd try to get investors more interested into the Intel technology of how they're implementing their stuff into drones, and we demo their drones, which are like autonomous in a way, like you could run into it and it'll just, it'll fly away on its own, it just won't run into things. So drones, about 3-4 years ago, when the prosumer consumer market was just starting out, you needed a bunch of experts, like engineers, pilots, people who know how to use soldering irons and software and debugging and things like that to be able to get one of these things to fly. And if you're going to fly for a production, a serious production, you need to have the redundancy and extra crew and extra propellers and motors and batteries and things like that. Very difficult to travel with, big cases, big crates, very sensitive, temperamental things. They don't have like hotlines you could call for help or anything like that. So, that niche position gave us, and my buddies and I, a good position to be able to use these things effectively. And again, at the time, you needed a table of experts to be able to create a great drone, be able to fly redundantly and complete a mission. So if we fast forward to today, the same drones that took $30,000 to build and 4 people to pilot and man, you could probably go buy at Best Buy for about $500, and the quality would be much better than what we were building 3 years ago. Which, what I started to notice is these jobs that I used to bid for were now being competed with 16-year-old kids who do it for $20 an hour with the drone they bought at Best Buy. So, you know, and this is something to be expected. You know, good technology gets cheaper. And there's nothing else in this world that I could say that gets cheaper as time goes on. You think of our energy costs, our costs are for doctors and health and everything like that. Technology is the only thing that gets cheaper as time goes on. And that had an effect, a market effect on us, definitely. Used cars, I'd consider technology. Oh, okay, we could debate about that later. That's intriguing. Yeah. Okay, you sound like you know what you mean. Okay. So I could put on a quick little video of what I would send to producers and directors, which is like my reel, that they want to see all the adventures and things like that I've been doing on my drone. So I'm going to throw it on. It's pretty short. So much. Yeah, so it's, you know, all that footage took years to kind of to get down and get the right thing going. But in the same time, it was only a couple years ago where this whole industry started. And a big part of being a technologist is, I think, is adaptation, is being able to pivot and move with the new technology, because it grows so fast, it moves so quickly. It's about clenching onto something full with all your aggression and passion and being able to go with it 24/7, which really led me to be able to create something out of nothing so quickly with the little drone my uncle got me. So more and more opportunities came. Like, one of the coolest things I just came from was this, we filmed the whole TV show, 13 episodes of this TV show called Drone Wars that's going to be coming out soon. And we filmed the whole thing in Croatia. And I originally got on board as a technical director, and by the time they met me, they wanted me to be the co-host as well. So we wrote a bunch of fun episodes and shot in these amazing locations, and I had a great time having a whole summer in Croatia, a country I knew nothing about before going, and I learned so much about. And I realized that in my past industries, being an IT guy or a computer guy or a programmer, I wasn't treated like this. I didn't have this kind of fun. I was definitely a small fish in a very big sea in my old industries. And when I jumped onto the drone industry, I very quickly became a bigger fish in a small sea. So I brought a few drones. Now, the drone industry, in my opinion, has kind of forked. It's gone in two ways. You start seeing these drones now, which are not sold at Best Buy. They are not really bought online. You have to build them, and they're intended for the drone racing scene. These little puppies can go up to 100 miles an hour in less than a second. They're very, very peppy, speedy, and quick. And pilots, these things go so fast that pilots can't watch them line of sight, so they wear a pair of goggles like this. And these pair of goggles are wirelessly connected to the camera on board here. It's like a small, cheap security camera that's remodified to be put on a drone, and it's sending a very, very fast signal. You can't do it over Wi-Fi or things like that because there's a little bit of a delay. And even a millisecond of delay could mean something like 10 to 15 feet of delay when you're flying with these goggles. So it's a very low quality camera, but you could optionally put like a GoPro on top of that. So you'll see a lot of two camera setups. And that's the reason they have like one for the FPV or first person view and the other one for recording HD videos. So this drone racer is often built in somebody's workbench at home. You can't just, like I said, go to the store and buy these things. You got to follow the instructions and pick from millions of parts, kind of like the early computer era when you had to go to the computer shop and decide which kind of RAM you want and decide how big your hard drive was, and the guy at the store would custom build it for you and it'd be ready in a week. That's kind of how this is right now. And it's a very DIY, fun, cheap thing to do, and it's an adrenaline kind of sport that's becoming. Now, ESPN put on their Drone Racing League, or DRL, and I think within the first season, Disney already bought that. It was doing pretty well, and it's pretty exciting to watch. It's like a whole new kind of tech NASCAR mix, computer game mixed in there as well. But it's still, to this day, one of the funnest times I know how to have is take this out to a big park or Venice High when Stanley's not there and put on the goggles, and then you just become transformed. You just leave your body and you really feel like you're sitting in the cockpit of this thing. And, you know, since it's not virtual, it's actual reality. Yes, sir. It does. This 3D... it'll still fly at those kinds of speeds. He asked, will this really hold a GoPro and still maintain the performance? And I said, yes, absolutely. But on these drone racers, we get about 2 to 3 minutes of that kind of performance before they have to come land and switch a battery out. So it's, when you're wearing the goggles, though, a minute feels like 5 years. It's just your heart starts pumping and adrenaline kicks in. And after years, that feeling doesn't go away. So you'll see a lot of communities doing this whole drone racing scene. And again, I'm talking about this fork where drones have moved away from the traditional use. Yes, sir, in the back. Great questions. So the question was, number one, flying that low and that fast, how do you prevent from running into things? Practice. It takes years of practice. And I still run into things all the time. This drone has ran into millions of concrete walls at 100 miles an hour. And every time they break, there's always some DIY guy on the internet who said, I'm going to make a stronger, better frame that's cheaper too. And along with all the electronics, they all get more ruggedized and cheaper as time goes on. People are finding the weak points and building these things. The most popular frames right now for the drone racing scene, one of them is made by my friend who's a dentist full-time, and he kind of designs this on the side. He doesn't make really any money off of it, but it's a huge growing industry. And number two is regulations. So regulations and drones has always been a big topic, as regulations are always changing around drones. Now, there are a lot of regulations. You know, if you saw in the video, I was actually flying an airplane, which is some pilots will go far and above and get licenses for an airplane to be able to kind of waive all these other regulations, FAA regulations. There are FAA tests you could take to become a drone pilot and be able to legally fly where and wherever you want, as long as you communicate with the tower and follow the guidelines and things like that. Regulation, though, when you're flying as a hobby, is pretty much open. As long as you're under 400 feet or you're not in any kind of big airspace, Class C, Class B airspace. Does that answer your question? Okay, great. Yes, sir, over there. So about a year ago, the answer was yes. So a drone that's over 250 grams, and this is a little bit under 250 grams, would require you to register with the FAA and have a tail number being posted to each drone. Now, just a few months ago, the FAA got sued, as it just seems like there's always a battle with this drone thing, and that whole thing got repealed. So now you don't have to register your drone anymore. We're back to the Wild West. And we kind of always are seeing the FAA regulations kind of slowly creep up, and they do catch along slowly, though. Yes, sir.
As a roofing consultant, and I would say with all modesty, as a world authority in roofing knowledge, for 20 years, I have climbed the roofs and I have visited and inspected thousands of roofs in different countries and make diagnostic and those report about it. Really, three times my life was in danger because, let me say, 40-story building, you know, and then the roof was a steep. I couldn't look down to the street, I became dizzy. Okay. Now I'm thinking back, now company is called Google Snap. Google Snap, they have developed a base of the drone, they have a camera, they make not only measurement of the roof, not only measurement of the roof, right? They make diagnostic and make a proposal and everything. And I wish this technology would have been invented many years ago, but now I'm retired, okay? But I enjoy still looking at it. I went to Google. There are many, many companies. There are various types of drone they have made. But for roofing, the Roof Snap is amazing. Please go to Google and write the Roof Snap, and you know what I'm talking about. I'm very pleased of your contribution, at least in my field, but I bet you in many other fields also, in agriculture, in many, many things. I've been contributing a lot. Thank you very much.
Wow, thank you so much. That's a great input. So you're saying that directly, from your experience of climbing all these roofs and the danger involved, you see how the drones are changing that landscape today. That's wonderful. Yes, sir. So the question was, is there liability insurance for the drones in the case you hit somebody in the face at 100 miles an hour? Absolutely, yeah. So bigger productions will require that their pilots have liability insurance or their umbrella, their own insurance. And, you know, we're good pilots. We know that we are held liable for every kind of crash, even if it's not our fault. So we are always on the side of caution and being not only meeting the rules, we're usually practicing well above the rules limitations to have a higher standard than what the rules give us. And things like that is don't fly over people without consent, you know, and letting everybody know the risk of the drones, don't hug it. It's kind of dangerous when the propellers are on, kind of thing. Yes, sir.
Simulator question. Would you rather ask it later?
No, go ahead. Right. That's right, yeah.
Typically coaxial.
That's right.
In fact, I haven't been able to find any where I could, looking at the vehicle flying in the air,
be looking at the vehicle flying in the air. And I'm happy to do that and also look from the vehicle. Do you know such simulators for the Mac?
So the drone simulators or UAV simulators, yeah, they're all actually moving towards this FPV or first-person view. And when you say you want to be able to see the drone on the horizon, that's what we call line of sight. So a lot of them are moving away from line of sight flying because FPV or wearing those goggles is all the craze right now. And most of the simulators that I'm familiar with, they all use this FPV concept where you're not seeing the drone on the horizon. You're actually, the whole screen is the drone. You're flying from the cockpit. For the Mac as well, yeah. So FreeRider would be one to check out. FreeRider FPV. There's some others I could definitely link to. Yes, sir.
There was one use for drones that I saw about 5 years ago, and I've never seen it come to fruition, and that is lifeguards, where they can run a life preserver out to somebody like 10 times as fast as a lifeguard can swim out there. Why hasn't anybody implemented that?
So we have seen a lot of test runs of that exact idea, where drones are coming out and dropping off a life vest and coming back. And I think it has been a marketing trick, kind of how Amazon and all these companies are, you know, getting into drones. My issues with it is just to have a drone on standby ready at all times may be more expensive and as well as costly than having a lifeguard at this time. Because it's such a short mission that when you turn on a real drone like this that's modern, it has to connect to like 17 plus GPS satellites. It takes about 30 seconds to a minute to boot up. It's a whole computer system on board, so it has to boot up with a computer system, check a bunch of sensors it has, and after about that minute, it's ready to fly. Now, in a lifeguard situation where you have this short mission critical time, the drone would have to kind of be on standby all day waiting for that event to occur because you don't have that 1 minute to spare. A lifeguard would have been there by then. And what I think is going to change is the way drones are being powered and built. I think we're going to start to see kind of little mini helipads for drones that drones can connect to, charge up, and be deployed off these things, and they're interchangeable, fully autonomous. Yeah, a little solar power on there as well. So, you know, that kind of brings me to this point, that 1 billion people in this world, a billion people, don't have access to all-weather roads. Now, when it comes to how do we get food to them, how do we get supplies to them, how do we get medical aid to them, do we rebuild these roads that are going to be washed out again, or, you know, the best and cheapest solution right now is to deploy drones, little drones that are carrying medical supplies and food that can reach these villages that have no roads, that have flooded roads, iced out roads, things like that. That's right, yeah. Absolutely. The question was, is there anti-collision technology in these drones? And there is, and they're getting more and more evolved now. I wouldn't call it ready yet, because right now you'll see a lot of the drones coming out, even out of Best Buy. They'll have a forward-facing sensor, a lower sensor, so it doesn't run into anything while it's going forward or going down. We have yet to fully see a 360-degree view that is comprehensive enough to respond to fast things, like a bird that may be in the way. But it is happening, and the software is going quite well. My only issue is that the biggest company doing this, and the monopoly of this whole thing, is DJI, a Chinese company. Yes, sir.
I read an article recently that Amazon is there's speculation that Amazon is planning on releasing these beehives in major metropolitan cities, mm-hmm. where the premise is drones will go to these beehives, pick up packages, and deliver them to residential areas around those beehives in the metropolitan cities. Do you think that speculation has any merit, or if it's we're really far away from that kind of concept?
I think we're far away from a concept that works for people like in New York City, where you live in on a floor where there's people below you and above you and things like that. I don't understand how the concept's going to work for that. The drones, any drones that we have, it's very difficult for them to detect little things like power lines and things like that in big cities. If you're living at a ranch or something like that, it's a lot more feasible. You have that open space where you don't have all this radio interference. You don't have every floor running their own Wi-Fi and all this noise and points of failure. So I don't see it being market ready for everybody yet. If you live out at a ranch, suburb area that's just open, yes. But New York City, I can't imagine that working there. Yes, sir. Always. Always. Absolutely. I've been testing him to deliver pizzas and beers for a long time myself. Yeah. Yes, sir, in the back.
When we were watching your reel, and some of these shots look like you're covering a rather vast amount of territory, where are you? How are you controlling them?
Yeah, so modern radios allow us to communicate about a mile out, sometimes a little further, sometimes a little less, depending on all that radio noise I was talking about. So I would pick an effective position where I kind of could see the drone if I had to, take my goggles off or something like that. But most of the time I'm flying first-person view or FPV, either with the goggles or I have a monitor down here where I could quickly switch between looking at it line of sight and looking at it FPV. And most of the times for the more complicated shots, I'll employ a second person to help me operate the drone. So that way, my whole focus and job is flight path and maintaining flight. Where I have a second guy, his whole job is to shoot the camera. He could change all the many, many automatic camera settings to manual settings and be able to manually control shutter and focus and move the camera 360 degrees and tilt up and tilt down. Sure, one pilot can be able to control the camera as well and fly the drone, but when you distribute this job amongst two people, sometimes even three people, you're able to go further, fly longer, and risk more. Absolutely.
How long can you fly for?
So, like these little racing drones, about 2-3 minutes, tops. Those drones that you buy for filming things, they are anywhere from 15 minutes, 25 minutes. You have a nice, comfortable flight time on there. Yes, ma'am. So, I'll show you. If you want a little demo. Okay. Okay. So, I'm going to bring out my little drone that I like to fly inside. And this is pretty much the same as any other drone. It has a computer on board that's making calculations. It has a video camera. It has a wireless video transmitter. It has four motors. And we're going to throw a battery on. Let's see if this thing flies. Good question. So this would cost you maybe about $100. No. The batteries are pretty cheap. I got them on Amazon for like $16 for a pack of four. All the batteries for drones are usually lithium polymer.
Does $100 include the camera?
Yes. The $100 includes everything I'm holding here. But here's the issue. The goggles cost around $250. A proper radio costs around $200 as well. But once you have the goggles and radio, all you need to buy are drones after that, because the same goggles and radio will work for all your drones, most likely. Yeah, I can imagine. That's going to be my controls. And that's like a general purpose radio controller. You could use model airplanes, model boats, drones. So this one you could kind of buy, and then I 3D printed this little camera mount and soldered it into the board myself. You have to modify this one to add an FPV or first person view. So let's see. Unfortunately, you guys can't watch live. I lost a little adapter screen that I've used in the past, but I'm going to quickly play the video on my computer right after. Okay, so I see exactly what that camera sees right now. And I'm going to go ahead and hit record on these goggles. Put this down. Now, some of these batteries just may die on me. And this one, I feel comfortable to fly inside. It's not going to hurt anybody. Even if I run into you at full speed, it's not going to do anything. Yeah, so I feel like I'm sitting in the cockpit now. About 2 minutes of flight time here. Even less sometimes. Yes. I don't know about my shoulder, but maybe like an open palm, perhaps. So let's pop this video in and see how that came out.
Are those batteries rechargeable?
Yes, they are.
Okay, good. Because they're fairly expensive.
Yeah, for 2 minutes. I could go much slower, yes. I could even be in a static position and not move at all if I wanted to. And when you get into the more fancier drones with GPS and cameras looking at the floor for stabilization, they just get stuck. If you let go of the controls, even if it's windy outside, they're just glued in the air in that 3D position you left them in. 25-mile-an-hour wind and things like that, rain even won't move it. It's amazing. Okay, so this is exactly what I was seeing in my goggles. It's not super HD because it's really small. But it's just enough for me to be able to fly. Yeah, you got to pick and choose, mix and match. You'll choose from like 3 different controllers. You got to read reviews, which one's, you know, a bunch of different goggles to choose from. It's kind of like a PC, you know. There's a bunch of 8 GB RAMs, but there's 100 companies that make the same 8 GB RAM kind of thing. All right. Yes, ma'am.
You can bring it to a standstill. What's holding it up?
So what's holding it up is these 4 little blades or fans. They're kind of like the same mechanism of a helicopter that's pushing air down. And they're all pushing air down at the same time. And a little computer on there understands if it's level or not. So if it's unlevel, the computer knows it has an accelerometer and a gyroscope and a compass, and it'll know to, hey, if I'm this way, let's give a little more gas to these 2 motors to level out. So it's constantly doing work to be able to level out, as well as taking my input from the controller and mixing those 2, saying, I want to go forward. So it has to kind of battle between, how do I keep this level while going forward? The little computer decides all that. Yes, sir.
What's the relationship?
It's a very direct relationship. So the angle or the pitch that the drone is at is very crucial to the speed you're going. The way a drone moves forward, I'm going to bring out the bigger drone.
Josh, I think they were wondering if they could hold it and kind of pass it around.
Yeah, I got 2 even. Let's pass these around. I'll throw on this side too. So here's my camera. First thing I want you to notice is the camera's tilted up. My camera's angle is actually pointing up to the ceiling. The reason for that being is the only way a drone moves forward is by tilting. So now when I tilt my drone this way, the camera's actually level, looking out towards the door. And when you're going at this tilt, you're going pretty fast. And it's going to suck in the air like this. The back propellers are going to be working much harder than the front ones. You can. They're synchronized together by the computer at the onboard flight controller. Now, for example, for these little racing drones, you could flip them, dip them, do loops and backflips and things like that. So you can completely shut off some of the motors.
Yeah.
But most of the times they go to a low idle, so it doesn't wobble around in the air.
When I was in the business, we used to talk in lines of code.
Sure.
With 100,000 lines of code. You know, how much of that equivalent is in that little computer that's processing, that's flying that little monster?
For this little monster here, there's about a 32-bit processor in here. Yeah, and that's just for the flight controller. Now, each motor is also controlled by a separate computer as well, called the electronic speed controller, which is from 24 to 32-bit area as well. And lines of code, you do have many, many lines of code. You could go and actually review a lot of this code. It's open source for these DIY projects like this. I couldn't say exactly how many lines, but, you know,
50,000.
I haven't personally counted. I've looked at the code.
000.
Thousands. I'd say thousands, yeah.
We are making a podcast. Would be helpful for those who are listening eventually if you waited for the microphone to get to you before you started speaking.
Well, yeah, so I was going to ask about birds. There was something on the internet about a week or two ago, but down in Australia, about eagles attacking these things. Have you seen anything about that or here in the United States?
Absolutely. I've seen eagles attack them, hawks attack them. I've seen eagles and hawks be trained to attack them. Yeah, for police use and things like that. Yeah.
How rugged is that? It looked like it had a crash landing, but survived.
Absolutely. This has crash landed a million times, And the way we 3D print things now has all changed. The way we cut carbon has all changed because of that. We're trying to have something as light as possible, but as rugged as possible. So this is made out of a carbon fiber frame, something very rugged, but very light. And this is kind of like a bendable, mashable 3D print camera mount, which is very hard to destroy. He's got the mic.
Two real quick comments. One is, if you did have cyclic pitch control on one of the rotors or more, then you don't have to tilt the drone. You could actually fly like a helicopter, because I used to have those kinds. And the other one is, this is not my idea, but if you could comment on it at some point during the talk, but about Las Vegas, they commented that if they had a drone, they were thinking, this was on the net, a weaponized drone, they could have that thing search out that sucker and end the thing real quick. But at the very least, you could find out where he was.
So comment one, he asked if you had a kind of a pitch control in these motors that you wouldn't have to tilt it to fly forward. That is very true, but you add a tremendous amount of weight doing that, and the pros just don't outweigh the cons. It's not so bad flying like this. Very fun. So at Las Vegas, even if we had a drone up, and even if they're using the latest police military helicopter software, which has thermal information, it has visuals that go on top of what they're seeing on the camera that shows exactly the hotel room, the street, so they can recall this information to people on the ground. Even if we had drones doing that, I can't think, maybe you can, of how would you identify which hotel room is the target in? Because there's going to be people in many hotel rooms, maybe if they haven't evacuated yet. So you're at night to determine to smash that window, even with thermal and things like that. Yeah, could be possible if you know you're looking for a smash that window, though, right? Yeah, that's possible. Yes, sir. So the question is, how can a pilot maneuver the drone when it's very windy? Now, these smart drones that we use for filming and we put expensive cameras on, not these ones, not the racing drones, they're loaded with a bunch of sensors that not only are looking at the floor when you're flying, they have connection to 17 GPS satellites, multiple ones, just to make sure they're all correct. They have barometers, they have gyroscopes, they have every sensor you could think of that even if you have winds of 20 to 40 miles per hour, it'll stay still. It'll stay still. It knows where it is because of GPS and the camera where it's looking at. And if something pushes it, it knows it has to come back. And it's doing this all in real time. Yes, sir.
This gentleman here's question about cyclic control. Is there any advantage to it?
I'd say so. There is advantage to it. Like when we start carrying passengers, which we are already adopting on these drones or multi-rotors. When we start carrying passengers on this thing, it's going to be much more comfortable to go forward like this instead of having to tilt and move forward. Yeah, that's one advantage I could think of.
That little drone that you passed around?
Yes.
That's very nice, but it's $100. I have been buying little ones like that at Bed Bath & Beyond for $22.
Yeah.
And that's with the controller. So the only reason why I bring that up is it's a great hobby for people that have a lot of time on their hands, people that are retired and want to keep their manual dexterity. Mm-hmm. I'm 75 and my manual dexterity, I have 15 drones. And my wife let me turn the living room into a drone port. I hide them all under the coffee table. And in the morning, I have my coffee, and I pull out which one I want to fly. So there's a food for thought for the older gentlemen. Or ladies.
Absolutely. You could get drones for much cheaper than this $100 one. But what I will add to that is I'm not rich enough to buy cheap stuff. That if you don't buy nice, you're going to buy twice. So I would probably break that little drone a little too quickly. This one I've bashed around for years now. And, you know, I know I'm not going to break that radio controller either. It's just...
I have a question for you.
Yes, sir, in the back. Sorry.
When drones first started, it used to be basically a single engine. I notice now that you have at least four props. Does that just give you the better stability and control? And
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, drones, a gentleman over here mentioned that he doesn't know what the word drone means, which is a great point, because we've had RC helicopters and planes and things like that for a long time before they started calling them drones. It's just a media buzzword or something like that right now. And the word kind of emerged when we saw this shape of a quadcopter, where we saw these four propellers instead of that one helicopter propeller. And yes, it does give a lot of advantages to a traditional helicopter. You have a lot more the aerial effects of yaw and rudder and speed and things like that. They could be messed with a little bit more, tweaked. You could have a lot of easier flying autopilot mechanisms on board because of it. And these autopilot mechanisms are getting so smart, which is kind of how I started what I told you that I'm competing now with 16-year-old kids who are willing to do my job for $20 an hour. Is that these autopilot systems are so good that they're really overcoming what a pilot used to have to do. You don't have to learn how to fly it manually anymore. The autopilot will do everything for you. Even object avoidance now.
When you described the other units with the gyroscopes and the satellite connections, how big are those? How heavy are those? Who has those? Do you have those or the production companies?
So you could get them as big as this, maybe just a little bit bigger. And they're getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And they have all those features you talked about, really. And every year, the size gets cut in half, and the price gets cut in half every year, it seems like. EJ, what do you got?
Are most, if not all, drones quadcopters like you have here?
Most drones looks like they're quadcopters. Yeah, it's the most popular form factor now. And when you get into bigger production and even the drones that are carrying people, they even look like quadcopters, but they'll have another motor and propeller right under each one. So it'll actually be eight. It'll be an octocopter, but they call that an X8 format. And that gives some redundancy. Right now, if I'm flying along and one of my motors goes out, I'm going to crash. One of my props break, I'm going to crash. I have no redundancy. So hexacopters, octocopters, and things like that, decacopters, it goes on and on. They fix the redundancy issue. So you could have multiple failing units at the same time and your payload will still be safe. Quadcopter is like close to the minimum of a quadcopter, even though you could make it happen with three.
Okay, I'm a ham radio operator and I'm going to talk about interference. Now, are you required to use the model airplane frequencies? What frequencies do you use or what bands do you use? Because the police have their frequencies, the military has their frequencies. And so in other words, like out in the valley there's a model airplane base, and I've seen those things fly out there. So you have to use a model airplane. I know it's your controller. Is a model airplane type thing.
Correct.
Well, related to that, I'm, like I say, a ham radio. I can probably throw 20,000-30,000 watts of effective radiated power at that thing and smash it to the ground.
Absolutely you can, yeah.
Because it's probably operating near one of the ham bands. But it takes what's up in the mind, how evil you want to be. But let's say you're annoyed at this thing, and you're licensed or unlicensed. You don't want to use a gun, but you can throw a lot of RF at it, and it's dead.
Okay, yeah.
Now, have you had any problems flying like near Mount Wilson or something where there's a tremendous amount of power up there? Or power lines
or...
Do you have any problem? I'm talking about radio interference.
Absolutely.
Power lines cause radio. Oh, okay.
So we fly on the consumer level frequencies most of the time, which is 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz.
That's a model airplane frequency, right?
Model airplane started from like 600 megahertz and above. I'm not completely familiar, but I know they have a history of even 72 megahertz. So just for everyone who doesn't know what I'm talking about, these frequencies, 2.4 gigahertz and 5.8, which is primarily used for drones, is the most common everybody uses every day anyway. This is the Wi-Fi frequencies. This is what your phone talks on. So we don't interfere on these other frequencies where military use or airplanes use and things like that. You could absolutely change these, though. So most of us use those standard frequencies, but people will lower their frequencies lower and lower and lower so they can fly farther and farther and farther.
5 or 6 years ago, My son retired as a fighter pilot, and he tells me that he's working in this UAV field. I ask him, what's this all about? And he says, Dad, you don't understand. This is fun. It's just like flying model airplanes. Only they cost $100,000.
Well, first of all, was your son part of the U.S. Air Force, U.S. Navy?
He's retired Air Force.
That's awesome. Well, thank him for his service. That's awesome that he made it out alive. Yeah, they could get up to $100,000. You could have them from $20 from Bed Bath & Beyond, from this gentleman, all the way to $100,000, just depending on what you want to do with it. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure they already got that going, yeah. Yes, sir.
Earlier you said something about they lower their frequency so they can go more distance. How is it that lowering the frequency gets you more distance? I don't know.
So maybe our ham expert could explain this further. But so you have these pros and cons to the frequencies. The higher the frequency, the 5.8 was like the highest one I talked about tonight, gigahertz, you have more of a highway, a big highway to send information on. So I could get a higher quality video, more bandwidth, sure. But when I lower the frequency, I could go pretty far away, kind of like AM in your car. AM is a lower frequency. You could reach it pretty far away. But I don't have that big highway anymore. I have a smaller bandwidth. So I have lower video quality, but I get to go farther. So there's a pro and a con there. And we found that balance, that magical area to be around 5.8 gigahertz and 2.4. I don't understand the analogy.
Okay. You had a VCR and you put a tape in there, then they would ask you what speed you wanted to do, and you could get lower quality, but you could go longer, as opposed to running it faster for better quality, but not for as long.
Ah, you know, I never knew that, but that sounds like it's an appropriate analogy, yeah.
You're too young to know
about
VCR.
Yes, I am, yeah. Yeah, I did have one when I was a kid. It's very fun. Yeah. I really came unprepared for any kind of. Yeah. I can't fly this one for you guys, unfortunately. This one, I don't feel comfortable flying inside. This one is a flying blender. It's very dangerous, and it goes very fast, and I need a lot of open land to do it. But I can show you videos. Yeah. We got more videos if you ever want. Always got videos.
I had a question. So I saw something about using drones for fireworks or something like that, where they could actually replace the fireworks show or something. How does that work?
So there's a lot of, you know, I thought it was a joke when I first heard it, but it got explained to me how much pollution is created by fireworks and waste and collateral damage and dogs going haywire and alarms going off on the cars, and it's expensive and dangerous and pollution and all this. So drones can absolutely replace that, which is a cool segue to this. So like I was telling you guys, I did a lot of experiential drones, and what that means is it's a drone meant for the experience, not meant to complete a mission or a task or anything, just to be interesting, fun, a piece of art. And some of those drones were, these ones were popular, these little hoops we made. So we retrofitted a couple drones with hula hoops, and we put motors on those hula hoops, and then lights inside those hula hoops, and put some software in there, and we created a pretty fun effect. Let's see if I can get some internet here. That's it without the hoop spinning. And then we flick a switch on our radio and we get it spinning up pretty fast. Yeah. Sorry? Yeah, the lights are LEDs that are inside the hula hoop. Yeah, they have an individual power supply. And yeah, the drones will last 5 to 10 minutes, that kind of pressure. Yes, yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah. So the Super Bowl, they had a drone experience that could have been in lieu of fireworks that looked really cool. They had a bunch of, I think, 500 or 1,000 drones in a synchronous choreographed dance that moved across the NFL show. And it was pretty nice. I think it was actually pre-recorded, the drone scene, but I think one day we'll get there where it's live. So let's throw on some of my Instagram videos. That's really where I've been collecting a lot of them. And you'll notice a lot of these are right in Stanley's backyard. This is where I pretty much practice everything. This is right out of Venice High. That show I was telling you about that I went and filmed in Croatia, they came out with this little teaser. It hasn't aired yet, but this is all I got for the time I did there so far.
Drone Wars is a series of challenges to put pilots and engineers to the test.
We're coming in first on this one.
Teams of two must design and create the ultimate flying machine to be able to conquer ever-changing obstacles and win points to avoid being knocked out of the competition. Ready?
Ready.
Go!
Come on, buddy. You got it.
Oh!
Oh, no!
Run, run!
What's his name, Josh?
Josh,
question here.
Yes,
question.
Ma'am.
The Venice Hoops, you had a bunch of drones there, correct?
I had a what on the hoops?
The Venice Hoops.
Yeah.
I see how you did it, but there were many, so you had many drones there, then,
yeah,
correct?
We had many of them. I think we had about eight of them at our max.
Oh, that's why it was, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, it was awesome.
Sure, yeah.
When we first saw a drone, it was really, really noisy. And these are not, the bigger ones, are they quiet, noisy, what are they like?
They are still going to be noisy, yeah. And there's not much we can really do about that. They're displacing a lot of air. Yeah.
So when we use it for military use, do people hear them coming?
See, we've been using them in the military for 30 years, and we fly them at such a high altitude with very, very powerful optical zooms and things like that, that there is no really big need to get down and close. We're starting to see the swarm drones come down a little close for military use, but most of the time they're at a flight altitude that nobody would hear anyway.
You're talking about surveillance?
Yeah, even the surveillance drones. Like,
what about, do they target people with drones?
Absolutely. We've been doing this
for
30
years. So they have to be closer to them?
Not really, no.
They can get it from...
pretty much space, yeah. So I got to work on a few cool government projects. And, you know, what I'll tell a lot of people is that, you know, we imagine this telescope we got in space, like the Hubble telescope, that we could see distant stars and planets and galaxies even. And I ask people, imagine if we turn that around and look at Earth. It wouldn't be so hard. In fact, we have many satellites doing just that, that are pretty much telescopes, but they're turned around and looking at Earth. And from these satellites, you could read license plates off cars that are moving. And it's just very, very detailed. We've had these prying eyes on us for a very, very, very long time, too. So drones do give civilians kind of, sure, that little bit of power that does raise the privacy issue as well. But for most of the case, people could see them. The drones that you buy at Best Buy, you could see them flying up there, things like that.
But in the military use that we hear about, where they fire a missile and take out an ISIS head or something, are these the quad-type things, or are these just man that are flying around and could do that? Or are they like these in just larger scale?
They have all sorts of drones for that we use in the military that... we have ones that just look like old airplanes, and those are considered drones. They have multi-rotor drones. They have tiny little drones, every single kind. They have certain drones where a unit on the ground will be able to aim for the aircraft up there, be a second pair of eyes. Yes, sir. Let's get the microphone over to you. Hold on.
What you might have been asking about is back in the old days, a lot of them were gasoline-powered. Just like a car, internal. Now they're all electric, so they're a lot quieter.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So even though the technology has moved real fast, we're kind of stuck still on batteries. And that's where our biggest point of failure is and our biggest, our blocker of that's not letting us move forward is the batteries right now. And the world in general, just batteries are just tough. The technology has kind of peaked. And if anyone's figured out, it's like Elon Musk, how to really get the most out of a battery. You see other car companies that can't figure out how to get that kind of range that he does. Maybe Tesla will come to save the drones. Yeah, I imagine they're testing things. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
On the videos that we saw of you using the drone, were all of them with you in the air as well, or is any of that you shooting from the ground? And do you have to worry about how high your drone goes?
So that drone video I showed you, I was on the ground 100% of the time, other than the shots that showed me flying an airplane. And when it comes to the height, the general rule is, as a hobbyist, is that you want to stay under 400 feet. Sometimes when you go into production and you're doing some serious work, you'll pull out your FAA waiver, and you can talk to the tower and say, hey, listen, I need to go above 400 feet and complete the shot. And they'll say, oh, you know, no problem, all day. You can go ahead and do that. So recently the U.S. military banned the use of all DJI drones. Did you guys hear about this? Yeah. DJI, the monopoly of pretty much the drones. The Phantom, yeah, those little white ones you guys see in the sky, those are the DJI drones. And a couple of years ago, I was shocked that they didn't do this earlier. The DJI drones, Chinese-made drones, they take such detailed flight logs that even if you have no SD card or memory card in the drone, it takes pictures, GPS coordinates, headings, vectors, everything, and it uploads it to some servers in Beijing. And again, these are the biggest drone manufacturers out there. They're a multi-billion-dollar company now. They are creating a global surveillance system that people are paying to be involved in. And no one really knows the ultimate use of what they're doing. They could create a whole new map of the world very quickly. But they have access to a million drones in the sky at a time, pull the live feed from out of all of them, know exactly where in the world they are with the GPS. So U.S. military just kind of found out about this and decided to seize any operation of DJI drones across all militaries. They can be purchased by civilians, but they can't be used by U.S. military any longer. Absolutely, it does. Yeah. And the reason the civilian models also transmit all this data, any DJI does, is because they're trying to sell you on insurance and crash protection. So if you crash your drone, which happens to a lot of us, you call up the manufacturer and say, hey, listen, I updated the software and this thing went haywire. Now the company can say, hey, I'm looking into your flight logs, and I saw exactly how far you pushed that forward and exactly what was in front of you, and I could prove that your story's wrong. You could prove that their story doesn't add up.
Well, thank you, sir. Hello?
Yes, sir, in the back.
Radar detection.
Can these drones now be detected by radar?
Yeah, absolutely. Some of them can.
Even though they're very small?
The smaller ones really won't pick up depending on what kind of radar you have. It depends on the radar, exactly. Sure. This guy makes radars, I could see it. I'm sorry, he used to make radars that will be able to see small little drones. But the modern aviation towers, like Santa Monica Airport or LAX, they really, to my knowledge, they cannot see these little drones on their radar systems.
Yeah, there was one other thing I wanted to mention to people. If anybody decides to get into drones, you mentioned it earlier, the safety hoop around the propellers really makes a difference. I have some that don't have them, and I bruise real easy, and just it's amazing how much safer they are with the hoop around the propellers. So if you get into it,
correct,
and you don't want to hurt anybody, make sure to get it with the hoop around it. They're a lot safer.
It's a great like training wheels for the drones.
Exactly.
Well, thank you very much. And if you have questions for Josh, I'm sure he'll be available after. So we wanted to present him with the certificate of appreciation.
Oh, wow.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.